What's up, Beardos? You're listening to episode 256 of The Bearded Vegans.
Basically, our whole philosophy boils down to don't be a jerk.
Don't really answer the question first try. Not answering the question. I really hope people didn't tune in to hear us talking about beards.
Welcome to the show. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com. And you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's episode, we interview Chef Raul Medina about his anti-Thanksgiving zine.
Paul, two interviews so quickly together.
I know, we so rarely do interviews, but I think, Andy, like the last interview we did was great, and I think people are going to enjoy this one as well. So I'm happy that we are putting in this extra effort to do these interviews.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a really cool interview. It mentions a lot of restaurants in the Bay Area that I have been to or ones that I want to be at. So it was almost like a little trip down memory lane of a time when travel was actually a thing that I could do. But there's also a lot of really good conversation in there about sort of the conflict of Thanksgiving, both from the vegan perspective, but also from the perspective of how can we possibly incorporate this holiday into our lives when it is one that's sort of marking Native genocide in the United States. And I think that's something a lot of people have a lot of conflict about. So it's interesting to hear Raul's thoughts on that.
Yeah, for sure. And I would, you know, highly suggest people checking out Chef Raul Medina on Instagram at The Vegan Taqueria, not only for the great food pics. There's this like grilled vegan chicken that I don't understand how it's made, but it looks so delicious and I would love to try it. But not only checking out his Instagram, also checking out if you would like to purchase this zine, you can go to fuckthanksgiving.bigcartel.com. And as we discuss in the interview, the physical copy of the zine is sold out. I think they only made about 200 copies, but you can purchase a PDF of the zine that I would recommend people purchasing. I know that the time that this is being released, it doesn't give you much time to prepare some of these dishes, but they all look absolutely delicious. And you know what, Andy? You don't need to prepare these on Thanksgiving. You can make these dishes whenever the heck that you want. But yeah, I highly suggest people checking that out. And all of the money, 100% of the money, does go to the Sogo Reyete Land Trust, an organization, again, that we do talk about in the interview. So I wanted to throw that out there so that, you know, because I don't think I say the link until the end of the interview. And I don't want people to be like, where do I find this zine? So there it is.
Absolutely.
And Andy, just to, you know, give people a little bit of encouragement, the first 20 people that do purchase this zine, go ahead, send us an email with the receipt, and we will match that monetary donation to the Sogo Reyete Land Trust ourselves. So in purchasing this, the first 20 people, you will be doubling your impact. So make sure, if you do purchase it, send us that email, thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
And quickly, before we get into this interview, I do want to say that the sound quality on Raul's end is a little bit diminished for about the first 9 minutes of the interview. You can definitely make out what Raul was saying, but it might be a little bit more difficult. So just stick with it. And then around the 9 minute mark of the interview, miraculously, it gets better. Again, lots of really good stuff in there. And let's delay no further and kick it off to Chef Raul Medina.
Today, we are fortunate enough to be joined with Chef Raul Medina. Raul, thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah. So the first question we always like to ask people who are interviewing is, what was your personal journey into veganism? How did that come about in your life?
I think, like most people, you kind of transition through vegetarianism. And once you kind of learn a little bit more, you go directly towards veganism. But like for me, turning vegetarian, I think I was about 14. I was living in Mexico at the time. And I wasn't really living in a city. I was living in a kind of pueblo. It's not really a ranch. It's not really a farm. It's tiny. There's a lot of different people living there. And it's a very small community of people. So eventually you're going to have to kill a chicken. You know, eventually you're going to have to defeather a chicken, whether it's for the neighbor, whether it's for yourself or whatever. So while I was down there, you know, being like an American, being a child, basically, and seeing that it's kind of like you don't really pay attention to it until you're physically there actually doing it. And I think immediately there was just this disgust whenever I would see anybody preparing chicken, because I would see the tendons, the veins, and immediately I would connect it with it. It would just be, poor. Like, no, I can't do this anymore. So for a while in Mexico, I just, like, I told my grandma, basically, I'm going to go vegetarian. She laughed and she's like, you're going to starve. Like, I don't know what the hell you're going to eat out here. All we have is chilies, beans, peanuts, and meat. I'm like, then I'll eat chilies, beans, and peanuts. So immediately she taught me how to like cook. She taught me every different chili that there was to cook. She taught me all that. Like, I came back up to the States and like, I really quickly realized that in the United States, there's this system of factory farming that's just like, it's horrifying when you're coming from a different country and you see that in that country, they don't really use pesticides. They don't really use hormones. They didn't use any of those things. And over here, you see at like Whole Foods, that stuff is priced triple to quadruple of what it is in Mexico. And you're just like, I'm baffled because I'm like, oh, everything in Mexico is organic because it's too expensive to buy hormones. You know, it's too expensive to do all that kind of stuff. But over here, you immediately see it. Like the color of meat is different here. The smell, the taste, everything is different. Like when you're coming from like a small pueblo, a small little farm like me, and you have access to that kind of like, so that kind of food, like food that's naturally just grown there, it's a completely different system than it is in the U.S. So when I came back here, I was just like, nope, I cannot do this anymore. I'm just going vegetarian. I am, that is it. I slowly stopped like drinking milk. That's easy. I think like most people at this point like don't really view milk as something necessary, kind of like horrifying. Mm-hmm. But cheese, like every single person, cheese was like, you know, the kryptonite. I love cheese. I love Mexican cheese specifically. And coming from Mexico, you have access to all this kind of regional cheese that nobody knows about. You know, Bon Appetit is never going to make like an article about it, you know, because they're too busy talking about Gruyere or talking about this. But there's like these regional Mexican cheeses that taste, they stink like foot, but they taste like heaven. And it's like, oh God, they're made by Mennonites. Like they're made by these German Mennonites that were, that immigrated to Mexico in like the 1800s because Germany literally told them, we don't want you here. Mexico said, all right, we'll put you in the deserts of the north because we don't really want you here either. And they flourished. They make cheeses. They have like, I don't know, they flourished. It's a weird Mennonite community out there. So you see in like my home state, every once in a while, you see these blue-eyed, blonde-haired German people who speak perfect Spanish. And it just trips me out, and it's just really weird sometimes. But they're like a part of the community at that point, so I don't know. It's just weird. But just the disconnection when I came back here and I saw, like, oh wait, this is where the meat is coming from, and I can't do this anymore. And so now I'm gonna try my best, because I mean, in a Mexican household, you're kind of screwed either way. You know, I mean, your mom is going to cook whatever the hell she wants for you. She's not going to do anything special for you. So I kind of like was, okay, I'll eat beans and I'll eat tortillas and I'll eat the rice and that's it. Mm-hmm. And that gets old really quick. So like, I think every vegan on the planet is probably a better cook than most, just because we have to like learn. We have to learn how to do all these different things. That's just like not common. We have to cook for ourselves because nobody's going to cook for us. That was honestly it. Just coming back here to the United States and seeing all the factory farming. I went vegan officially when I moved to the Bay Area, probably in 2012. It was ridiculously easy in the Bay Area. in the Bay Area, every other, every other restaurant has some kind of vegan option. But the crazy thing that amazed me was that there was cultural vegan food here. Everyone's used to finding Vietnamese vegan food or Chinese vegan food or anything like that. But they had Ethiopian food here, which was ridiculous to me. I freaking loved it. There was like the South African dish I had out here that tripped me out. There was a lot of Jamaican food. There's just a lot of like food that I'd never had before that was vegan naturally, but I saw, like, I was on the alfalfa, you know, Sprouts tip and the Beyond Burger tip, and I just didn't know. You know, yeah. I knew that my culture had, but I didn't know what other cultures had. And here in Oakland, it's kind of like a completely different shift than it is in LA. Because in LA, it's kind of like whatever's hyped up, whatever's like, you know, whatever everybody else thinks is good based on the presence. Out here, the presence is based on whether you're good or not. Like we have the creme de la creme of vegan food out here. I honestly think we have like some of the best vegan food just because it has to be flavorful. It has to be bold. It won't make it. You know, there's mm-hmm. a lot of competition out here. And it's not necessarily based on hype, because people will try you out here. And if they don't like you, that's it.
So was this, cause you were kind of touching upon having to make some of the vegan or at least the vegetarian food for yourself when you were growing up. Is that kind of what started the inspiration for you to become a chef?
Yeah. So like when I was living out here, I was in immigration defense. I was basically a paralegal at a spot out here. And okay. That is an incredibly depressing job.
Seems like it.
It's really sad to have to tell people, I'm sorry, you're screwed. Or, hey, you got drunk one night and you had a DUI. Now you're completely screwed. You're going to get deported. It's hard telling people that. It's like you hear some horror stories like, my child heard me and my wife fighting, so he called the police. Now I have a domestic abuse charge on me and I'm getting deported. And that is just like, wow. Oh my Lord, because, you know, kids are taught, you know, you call the police when something's going bad, and then it, like, that kid must feel so horrible right now.
Yeah.
Got a bad deported. And there's only so much you can take, you know, as a person of color, like trying to help out, realizing that you're limited by the system is just depressing. It's horrifying. It's something that, a lot of people are strong. They can do it. I'm not. You know, I'll be depressed for months on end, and then I'll be like, I can't do this anymore. So I bought a grill, and for a while, for about like 2 years, I was posting my vegan food on Instagram. I missed meaty tacos. You can get kale tacos out of here. You can get like, you know, roasted carrot, whatever tacos. It's a salad. You know, it's California cuisine. That's cute. It's not a taco. I was craving carne asada, lengua. You know, there are cuts of meat in the Mexican gastronomy that Americans don't touch on because they're considered like, you know, poor people food. For us, it's like some of the most flavorful stuff on earth. Tripe, beef cheek, tongue. Those things like were tacos that I missed. That it was something like, oh my God, I can't have this anymore. And it's sad. You know, so I was immediately working with a bunch of the ingredients that you could find here. I lived close to Chinatown at the time. And I mean, in China, they've been eating soy for, I don't know how many thousands of years.
Anybody who says that, like, they have issues with soy. I mean, China's been consuming it for like millennia. And it's, I consider that kind of like almost a racist comment. Cause it's like, you know, you can't just say things like that when cultures have been consuming this for generations upon generations and have been like excelling at producing these things. So in Chinatown, I had access to yuba, which is a soy skin, and it had a chewiness that reminded me of meat. It had like a texture, but I honestly didn't know, you know, what it would taste like. I fried it up one day. I cut it up really thin, and it tasted like soy. It didn't taste like much. So then I started shopping around for different spices that I could find. And like I said, here you have access to a lot of different Palestinian spices, South African spices, Vietnamese spices, Chinese spices, like crazy. So I started like experimenting and being, okay, what can I do with this? What can I do with that? Eventually I found something that tasted just like carnitas, just like pork. Mm-hmm. And the yuba picked it up so well that it just tasted amazing to me. I couldn't stop eating them. I kept making myself tacos constantly. I would take dates out. I was on OkCupid. I would take dates out as market research to the lake, feed them a couple tacos and be like, hey, you know, how much would you pay for this taco? And every single one of them loved it. They were like, dude, $5. Oh my God, are you kidding me? And at the end of the day, it's like, whether you didn't like me, that's fine, but you got to love my tacos. So I have like a customer already off the bat. And that's great.
Yeah.
So like they were a hit the first time I came out, with my grill. I bought a griddle online. I had it sent to the immigration office because I was living at a place that was a little questionable. I didn't want anybody to take off with it. So I was like, all right, I'm going to send it to the office. I'm like dragging it down the street. I don't drive. I bike only. I'm like this crazy, weird hippie who does things my way and stuff. So, you know, I'm like dragging it down the street to my place, lugging it up the stairs just to see how it works, learning how to grill, learning how to cook. It was horrible. Like, I didn't know what the hell I was doing the first day. I don't think I even wore gloves the first day. Like, it was just it was a nightmare. But I had like 30 people waiting to eat. Once they ate that taco, they were fucking in love. And they were like, when's the next time you're going to be here? This is amazing. Let me get another 4 to go. I sold out within like an hour, I think. And then I'm like, okay, next week I'm gonna debut my next meat, you know, carne asada. Mm-hmm. And everyone went crazy. The next week I had 50 people. The next week after that I had 100. The week after that I had a line that went for an hour. And then suddenly people from LA were coming and it was like a phenomenon. We got asked to do Coachella. We got like interviewed by NPR. We went down to LA. I was living in LA for a little bit after that. And we won the Vegan Taco Madness, which is like LA's premier taco contest.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, we were the first vegan taco to ever win it. We went against actual real deal meat, established restaurants, like some of the like people that I admire, people that I used to eat at. Honestly, some people have been there for such a long time that, you know, I know of them. They're like heroes to me. So beating them is amazing. It was like, wow, I can't believe it. And to every single one of those chefs, I was telling them that day, I was like, look, it wasn't me that beat you. It's veganism that beat you. Make a fucking vegan taco already. And, you know, you're gonna increase your business.
Is this the beginning of Taqueria La Venganza?
Yeah, well, I mean, that started in 2015. By 2016, we were at Coachella. By 2017, we were like doing NPR interviews. In 2018, we went LA Taco Madness.
You can't be stopped.
We didn't want to. It was, I know meat. I grew up loving meat. I did not want to disconnect with that. I'm a Taurus. I'm a hedonist. I'm one of those, if I'm going to have it, I want it now kind of persons. And like, that was integral to me. I needed that flavor. I couldn't live without it. It's part of my culture. It's a nostalgic flavor that I want other Mexican vegans to have. I want other Latin vegans to have. I want it to be an option. And so I started introducing it to places where I knew it would be a hit because people already had something to compare it to.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my lines were people of color. And that was something that I was incredibly proud of. People were telling me, oh, you got to open up in Silver Lake. You should open up over at Melrose and this and that. And I was like, why? They have their kale tacos. They have their, you know, carrot,
mm-hmm.
slaw, whatever the hell they want to put on it. Like, I am trying to feed my people. I'm trying to feed the people who want to transition and change their health up because they're, for some reason, genetically predisposed to diabetes in this country. They're not in their own country. My grandma mm-hmm. lived to be like 96. My father lived to be 60.
Mm-hmm.
He died of diabetes. I know that I'm prone to it. I live a vegan keto diet just because I don't want to, like, you know, suffer any detriment to my own genetics in this country. You know, the food is so processed here that we can't eat it. And we're dying. And it's like something has to happen. If I need to make veganism accessible by making it cool, by making it not even cool, by making it a point of talk when it comes to, like, I was one of the first people to really come out and say, look, you can't live cruelty free. You can't say you're cruelty free while my people are in cages, mm-hmm. you know, while my people are picking your freaking vegetables. It's impossible for you to say that. Anybody who wants to say that is just, they're being blind. It's a cognitive dissonance that they don't want to agree with. And I'm sorry. I'm brown. I'm an American. I was born and raised in California. I am not about alfalfa sprouts and yoga pants. I am about spicy ass salsa. I'm about flavor. I'm about something that ties to my culture, and I want it served to me by a brown person or by somebody who knows what the hell they're serving me. I don't want a Beyond taco. I don't want an Impossible taco. I want a vegan beef cheek taco or a vegan tripe taco. Mm-hmm. I had explained to a vegan once what tripe was. They're like, what's tripe? And I'm like, oh, it's pig intestine. And they're like, what the fuck? Why the hell would you veganize that? And I was like, why the hell wouldn't I? Because it's one of the most unhygienic fucking things in the world, but it's delicious. It's part of my culture. People line up down the block in Mexico just to go to a taquero that has specifically tripe. It serves nothing else, just tripe, fried up, delicious. My mom loves it. My dad loves it. It's one of the only vegan tacos that my mom will eat of mine. She's like classic Mexican from the ranch. So she's like, don't give me soy. You're poisoning me. I don't know what the hell soybean is. I don't know what tofu is. What is that white cheese? That's what she calls it, yeah. White cheese. I'm like, okay. but she will actually eat this tripe taco because it tastes just like tripe, which I know is something weird to like comprehend, but it's delicious.
Yeah. And
so many people who have never tried tripe will try it. Because, hey, it's not coming out of a pig's ass, you know? It's it's fucking hygienic for the most part.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just crazy what our own culture does to us, what foods we hold a nostalgia to that other people just look at as off, as weird, and they can't comprehend it. And for me, it was a thing of evolving the gastronomy of my people and not even evolving it in a way that touches back to tradition. This isn't a new taco. I'm harkening back, like I'm doing classic tacos. You know, I have a repertoire of like 10 classic tacos, all of their versions in an alkaline, non-soy, non-GMO veggie version, just for the people who don't want to eat soy, who want to keep it clean.
Yeah.
Most of my stuff is allergen free. I make a cheese that you literally have to be like a bubble boy to be allergic to. There's no soy, no nut, no anything in it. And it's delicious. And it's literally because, you know, nobody really thinks about what other cultures, how food affects them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I will say this, I would definitely recommend anyone to go on Instagram, the Vegan Taqueria, check out the food that you're making, because there is definitely a lot of great food pics, including the one that caught my eye was that I think it's like the chicken, it's on the grill and it just looks exactly like meat in a way that I've never really seen like a vegan dish looking before. Like it has the char to it and it seems like it has like the texture and the consistency. It's very impressive. The first time I looked at it, I sent a picture to Andy and I was like, look at this goddamn thing, because it's like I need this right now.
So like I'm kind of a jackass in the sense of when I hear somebody trying to do something, I'm gonna like, oh, I'm gonna do it better than you. Screw you. I heard El Pollo Loco was coming out with a chicken.
Mm-hmm.
With a vegan chicken. And I also heard that it was going to be cross-contaminated, that they were going to use the same, you know, grill, that it was going to be, you know, the same thing that all these fast food places do.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, whatever. I've had this chicken in my repertoire for a while. I've never really busted it out. I have like this black book of recipes that I don't bust out because I want to keep surprising people every year. I want to keep making them go, damn, what the fuck? What the hell is that? Oh, my God. What the hell's going on? So this chicken, I felt like, okay, everyone's in quarantine. Everyone has time to grill, but nobody's really grilling. Up here, it was smoky because of all the fires and stuff. And this thing was a phenomenon. The second I started selling it, like, everybody came back to buy it. It was ridiculous. We made a collaboration with Bare Knuckle Pizza up here, where we had a barbecue chicken pizza, a vegan barbecue chicken pizza, and it was just ridiculous. It's marinated for about, like, 24 hours. It's grilled over actual mesquite. The flavor of smoke is in there. The flavor of pineapple, jalapeno, coriander, like it's just, it's delicious. It tastes so much like Pollo Loco that, I mean, it can fool anyone. I think that's one of my pride and joys right there.
That's awesome. I mean, when I'm able to travel again, I hope to make it out there at some point. Definitely.
For sure.
But so the other big thing that I wanted to talk to you about was the zine that you came out with, Give Thanks on Stolen Land. I've also seen it online being referred to as the anti-Thanksgiving zine or the fuck Thanksgiving zine. So can you tell us about this project that you put together, please?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think as a vegan, most of us hate Thanksgiving just because it's kind of like, okay, what the hell am I going to eat? As a person of color, I mean, it's a huge conflict to me what Thanksgiving is, because I am an American, you know, and I do like celebration, and I do consider myself, in a sense, a patriot to what I want my country to be, what I want my country to evolve into, not what it currently is, kind of. So I find it's hard to like celebrate Thanksgiving, especially as like a person of color in this land. You just feel kind of like a stranger, you know, and it's weird. But I do love the celebration, and I think every person of color has their own version of Thanksgiving. Like, it's not always sweet potato and stuff. Like, my stuffing has jalapenos. Like, our family has, you know, tortillas and salsa on the table. You know, it's still Thanksgiving, but it's our Thanksgiving. And while I still wanted to celebrate it, I mean, at this point in my life, I've realized, what the hell am I celebrating? We're on stolen land. Like, a really good thing about up here in the Bay Area is we recognize the indigenous cultures here. We know that we're on Ohlone land. We know that we're on stolen land. Mm-hmm. I think the city recognizes it. Most people recognize it. The sad thing is that come Thanksgiving, it gets glossed over. You know, Thanksgiving, Bon Appetit puts out their Thanksgiving edition. Everyone puts out their Thanksgiving edition. And suddenly everyone's going crazy for some kind of brine turkey that you're smoking for I don't know how many hours. And, you know, seven different ways to make pumpkin pie and the same old white colonizer kind of thing. And I don't want to phrase it that way, specifically white colonizer kind of thing. But that is what this holiday specifically is about.
Yes, for sure. Definitely.
So anybody who wants to like say, oh, he's being a racist, is like, no, people came here to colonize this land. You cannot deny that. That is what this celebration is about. It's not like, are we giving thanks that people are being eradicated, that their histories are being erased, that most people can name, you know, most of the 50 states, but they can't name what indigenous tribe was around their county, was around their area, was around their city. Like, this is the real history of the United States. And it's sad that when I was growing up, I learned about so many different presidents, so many people that I now view as like, oh my God, you had slaves. Oh my God, you were horrible. Oh my God, you raped so many people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's hard because you grow up thinking Thanksgiving's amazing. I'm going to make this, you know, this little turkey design when I'm a little kid. Hey, you're either a pilgrim or you're an Indian. I'm brown, so obviously I was going to be an Indian, and I was rocking it and I loved it. And finger painting these turkeys is awesome. And then I'm going to eat like crazy, all my favorite foods, mashed potatoes. Oh my God. And then I get to see family. Everyone's drunk and having a good time. How could you not love Thanksgiving? And then you grow up and you realize what the fuck Thanksgiving is about. And it's a fucking conflict. And you don't know how to celebrate it anymore. And on top of that, I'm a vegan. So the genocide is double. I'm thinking, wait, there's still turkeys. This entire celebration is fucked. Mm-hmm. Like, beyond any, like, I don't understand any person who can view any benefit to this celebration. It just seems so warped to me that it's hard. So I wanted to get together with all my favorite Bay Area chefs. Most of them are people of color. So I was like, I need your guys' input. What did you guys grow up eating? I want different cultures aspect. Like, I want a different culture's version of what the hell their harvest meal is. Because I know in my house we're having, you know, candied sweet potato, the Mexican style. But I know other places are having sweet potato pie. And I'm wondering, you know, what is the Taiwanese family having? What is the Italian family? Like, what are different people having at their homes that isn't the traditional Thanksgiving? Because the traditional Thanksgiving is fucked. And at this point, we need to evolve it into either a harvest festival, a recognition of indigenous peoples, a celebration of opportunity. Because honestly, that's what we celebrate in my family. We celebrate the fact that we get to have this opulent American lifestyle. You know, we're not even thankful for the development of this country. We're thankful for the struggle that we had to go through and what we have. And what we have was not given to us. Like, we don't have to be thankful to anybody but ourselves. Like, we had to struggle through this system. And we give thanks to that. But then behind that, like, it's not even our freaking land. There's people that are being erased completely. Mm-hmm. Like, how the fuck can I be thankful for anything at that point? And it sounds depressing. It sounds like a Debbie Downer thing, but it needs to be recognized. And once we get over that point, we can actually celebrate what this time could mean. And for me, like, I knew immediately I wanted the top of the pop of the vegan Bay Area scene. We got Lion Dance Cafe there. They used to be known as S&M Vegan. Out here in the Bay Area, they're like, they're mythical status. They're amazing. They're just... like, their sandwiches in the freaking SF Chronicle every other week. They make their own bread in the sandwich. It's amazing what they do. I can't, like, thank them enough for even, like, taking time out of their day because they're ridiculously busy and hooking us up with this. It's a Brussels sprout gnocchi dish that was freaking delicious. I can't get over it, how good it was. We got Tacos Oscar, who I think this year or last year got, like, Michelin recognition. Like, they recognize him as like, hey, you're an up-and-comer. And he's not even a vegan spot completely, but he offers, like, a huge vegan menu. And he's, like, such a big thing in the Bay Area. And I'm like, I know I want another person who isn't me doing tacos, doing something. Because, you know, I'm just one aspect. I'm just one region of Mexico. And Oscar Michelle, like, he's the person who runs Tacos Oscar. He's an amazing person. Like, he included a persimmon salsa. That, I mean, it's awesome. It's autumnal. It's charred. It has all those flavors of fat, acid, sweet, but with a little heat, you know, all that kind of, it's delicious. The cover of the whole pie, the cover is a pie that says, fuck Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. it's a beautiful pie. It was vegan. It was delicious. It looks gorgeous on the cover. I don't think anybody can look at this pie and be like, fuck, I want a piece of that. Like, nobody can be like, I don't want that pie.
Yeah.
But they have to read fuck Thanksgiving. So whatever your notion is, yeah, what is this holiday really about? Do you want to eat it or do you want to, like, read it and complain about it?
Yeah.
I don't want to eat it. It was done by Ginger Bakes. I think her Instagram is Ginger Bakes Oakland. She does these political pies. So she's done, like, fuck the police, blueberry lives don't matter, that kind of stuff. Like, she'll do different pies based on political pie things, and it's great. She's doing, like, fuck Thanksgiving. She's doing a bunch of stuff. It's all vegan. It's all amazing. We got Michelle Nazal from Mishmishuk. I think VegNews just recently did a feature on it. She does Palestinian vegan food. Like, not Middle Eastern vegan food, Palestinian vegan food. And that's important to make that distinction. And I thought, I mean, she put the entire book together. She's the person who kind of formatted everything. So my hat is off to her. Amy Nowak of Ginger Bakes, she took all the pictures. But yeah, Michelle Nazal, she put everything together. Like, I couldn't have done this without both of them.
I mean, it's like a beautifully put together zine. Like, I as someone who I will fully admit is not great at cooking, I don't look through a lot of, you know, like, recipe zines or recipe books and stuff like that. As I'm looking through each individual page and I'm like, oh, wow, this looks so good. Oh, wow, this looks so good. And then I get to the end and there's the picture of all of the dishes out. And it's like, I don't know why, I just didn't expect that coming. And all of them together, it just was like, I was like, God, I want to be in that room with all of those dishes at once, because before that I'm seeing them individually and now it's like, oh my God, all together. It was like mouthwatering. It looks so good.
And that's a Thanksgiving spread, whether you want to admit it or not. That's amazing. You look at that and it's like, who doesn't want to sit around that table and give thanks? Because it looks so freaking amazing.
Yeah. So I do definitely want to acknowledge there's a nice prologue that can I assume that you were the one that wrote the prologue to the zine?
Yeah.
So you wrote this prologue and it starts with this phrase, Thanksgiving is a conflict, which you had already kind of brought that idea up. And I do think a lot of people can empathize with trying to navigate, you know, these traditions you had growing up and these family relationships you have with people who, you know, may not think that it is the issue that it is. And you're trying to navigate those with the realization that Thanksgiving does have some, it has fucked up roots. And so you kind of already talked about like what that means to you. And you had already also kind of mentioned how like you want this country to evolve. So what do you think, like, how do you picture that happening? Like, what is the future of Thanksgiving to you?
Honestly, I think the future of Thanksgiving is actual Americans, like the entire demographic of what America is, contributing to Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. We need to break with tradition. These traditions are crazy. They're based on these old, like, just archaic old white men figured mm-hmm. these things out. Like, it was not what worked back then for the country does not work now for the country, and it needs to evolve. This everything that we've been seeing this year is due to one thing, is due to the internet, is due to visibility, is due to everyone being able to see what it's like to be a person of color in this country. It's a struggle. It's incredibly hard. And you want to love the country. You want to love its holidays. You want to be a part of it. You want to recognize yourself as an American. But it's very hard because I don't identify with that American value. Because if that's what it's about, if it's about celebrating genocide, if it's about denying the bulk of the country, and just, I mean, Veggie News did a feature on this. If you check out the comments, they're some of the most ridiculous. And I mean, I usually love scrolling down comments and seeing these hateful, ridiculous things. But it's like, oh my God, how could you actually believe what you're saying? Yeah. There's so many people, oh, this is so disrespectful. How could you say this? This is so unpatriotic and blah, blah. I'm like, no, you're being unpatriotic. You're being disrespectful. Know the history of your country. Like, this is your country. There were people living on it here before. Be proud of that. Be proud of the fact that you can acknowledge it. We're not trying to kick you off the land. Like, I think that's really honestly what most people are afraid of. That we're going to go back to some weird old nomadic ways, that your reparations are going to be somehow put towards there not being any houses, any stock market. Now suddenly it's barbaric and this and that. And that's fucking ridiculous. The reason people want reparations, the reason people want this is to get acknowledgement, to even be part of the fucking discussion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's hard to be a player in this country without money. It's hard to be a player in this country without political power. And it's ridiculous. And veganism itself, to me, like, comes out of a place that was of that minority. Like, when I look at veganism and I look at that factory farming that I was talking about, like, 90% of those workers are immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
These are people who are going to suffer PTSD after killing nonstop animals for 8 hours a day. These are my people. A lot of them are brought over on buses in a supposed legal immigration way by, like, Tyson Chicken and all these other companies. They're used for a season and then they're shipped back. These are the worker programs that are in place right now in the US. And it's ridiculous because the second they get sick from the disgusting ammonia fumes from all the chicken shit that they have to scrape every day so that you can have your fucking leg, your little, you know, drumstick. When they get sick, they get deported. They don't have any rights in this country. And that's what it feels like sometimes. And until we recognize those things, I don't want to look at Thanksgiving the same way that people look at it. You know, I will say fuck Thanksgiving. I will continue to say it. And, you know, it needs to evolve. Like I've been saying, the future of Thanksgiving is when we get a fucking voice at the table. when we get a seat at the big, you know, at the grown-up table, when we get to decide what the hell this day is about. Like, it's not about glossing over, you know, your history and trying to make everything pretty and pilgrims and Indians and buckle hats and fuck that. You're indoctrinating the youth. You're trying to tell them that the history of this country was compliance. And like, what the fuck was that? No, I want to know that this country has conflict. I want to know what the fuck is behind it. I'm a Mexican. I don't consider myself indigenous. I'm a Mexican. That means that in my country, in my blood, I have Spanish blood. Like, I'm a product of colonization. I don't consider myself a Spaniard. I am Mexican, you know? Like, it's important to me to recognize that I am not indigenous. I'm here living in California. There were indigenous tribes, indigenous peoples who were here before me. I don't know who the hell they are. I know LA is Taino territory, I think, and up here it's Ohlone territory, it's Tongva land in LA. I'm not even sure. See, that's how messed up it is, where, like, we really need to make this a part of our history. We need kids to be learning what different tribes or what their practices were. That's what people want. That's when Thanksgiving gets evolved. When we give thanks over this land and who tended it before us and who was here before us and who let us in, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. Do you see the country as moving towards that? Because I certainly agree with you when you say it's like every Thanksgiving, it all gets glossed over, but you were also saying, you know, especially with this year, with like the internet and resources being shared and all those things, do you see it as progressing or is it every year it kind of gets put back to square one on Thanksgiving?
There is definitely resistance to bring it back to square one. That make America greatest shit and great again shit. I mean, what kind of America are you talking about? I think America is great right now because our cell phones are a tool for truth. And that's amazing. We have truth at the end of our fingertips. That was denied so many freaking years. I don't know how many people were thrown behind bars and they didn't have a chance to appeal. They didn't have a chance to do anything based on like the system that is corrupt as hell that we've been able to see. Like, you can't deny what we've been able to see on video. Nobody deserves to be treated the way that, I mean, law enforcement is treating people. I'm sorry. That's why this entire country is a conflict. This entire like time is a conflict. I don't want to think about these holidays, which are based on the founding of this country, and not consider so many hundred years later, these issues are still present and they're not being alleviated. And in fact, they're being looked up as a conflict, as a side to be taken. There is no side to be taken in this. It is only the side of truth. It is like, look, you saw what's on video. A person used a counterfeit bill and they died. Somebody put their knee on their neck and they killed them in front of I don't know how many people. You can't deny that. I don't care what camp you're in. I don't care if you're red or if you're blue, if you're Republican, if you're Democrat, if you're anarchist, whatever the fuck you are. That is horrifying. Mm-hmm. It's as horrifying as this holiday. And we're still celebrating this today. So however much we try to evolve it, whatever steps we try to take forward, there's always a step back that people are trying to take us. There's always a kind of like resistance of saying, no, tradition is more important than evolving. Tradition is more important than this or that. The founding fathers and I don't know how many other things. I can give a shit about the founding fathers. I give a shit about my father. I give a shit about the fathers out there struggling, about the mothers struggling. I give a shit about the people who can't afford to eat vegan here because it's too expensive to buy non-GMO vegetables. Because we're feeding most of our grains to animals that we then shoot up with hormones and we feed that back to our people. That's horrifying. Like, I am tired of the cognitive dissonance in this country where people can't admit to the very faults of this country. We need to grow up. We need to take responsibility for what the fuck we're doing. until that happens, like, we're going to be stuck in those ways. And like I said, our cell phones are a tool. Our voice is a tool. I don't know how many people of color have gotten chances because we had to call out people, because cancel culture had to come about. And all these people who are talking about, oh, that's so drastic, what one person says doesn't, it could be taken out of context. No, the context is there. They said it. And this is what we want. We want a voice at the table. We want that. We want a person to admit it. We don't want to be looked at as children who can't be taken seriously.
Yeah. And certainly I would say that, you know, at the very least, the internet and technology and stuff allows people to say, like, get this zine from across the country. Whereas, like, you can get the physical copy or you can get a PDF, and that could be, you know, boosted around the country.
That's exactly. We raised $7,000.
That's awesome.
That's ridiculous. I don't even have that in my bank account.
And that is for the Sogorayate Land Trust, correct?
For the Sogorayate Land Trust. They're getting 100% of the proceeds. That's why I'm so thankful to all the chefs that put in their time, because we're not getting anything out of this except we actually get to give thanks. We get to give thanks to all the people who donated, who are making a difference. Like, it matters. This is very important. I'm so incredibly proud of the vegan community, because they put up this money, you know, they came forward, and that's amazing to me.
So I actually do want to ask about more about that, the organization, but you just brought up something that I wanted to touch upon as well, which was, like, what is the, because obviously this is like a zine of all vegan recipes that is specifically talking about these issues with Thanksgiving that we've just been talking about. So what do you think is the place of veganism as it pertains to how we're having these conversations, how we're navigating through Thanksgiving?
I think there's so many things that veganism could touch upon that aren't necessarily discussed because they're just constrained in the cult of veganism. The second you bring up certain things, people are just going to be, oh, you're a vegan. You don't know what you're talking about. Come on, get real. Cultures can't, you know, it's ridiculous. I think every vegan on earth knows that Thanksgiving is a sad day. It's a day that millions of turkeys are murdered, you know, like that's, it affects us for sure. A lot of the country says, you're stupid. Dark meat is delicious. White meat, I can't get enough turkey. Oh my God, it's so good. Fried turkey. And for us, it's horrifying. It's disgusting. So if we can't make that connection that this holiday has roots that are as horrifying, then what's the point of being a vegan?
Yeah. Yeah. I can only speak for myself, but it definitely, you know, it's like I'm trying to live this vegan ethic, which is one that's preaching compassion for everyone, you know. And so it's like if I can't extend that to people as well and acknowledge the horrible roots of this holiday, then like what is my vegan ethic truly then, you know?
Exactly. I mean, when push comes to shove, how far does your veganism go when a conflict is brought up? Like when that internal discussion of shit, am I wrong? Mm-hmm. Cognitive dissonance is a bitch. Nobody wants to admit that they're wrong. Nobody wants to admit that the entire structure of belief that they've had growing up is crumbling around them. But I mean, nobody can deny that an animal that's bred to be murdered, that's shot up with hormones, that's like fucking what, 300% times the original size it used to be, who can't even mate with itself anymore. Is that an animal or is that a product? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And is that what America views us as?
Yeah.
Are we a fucking product?
And I mean, certainly, you know, there are many industries benefiting off of the commercialization of Thanksgiving, the holiday. You know, there are going to be many people who benefit from Thanksgiving remaining the way that it historically has been, and they're benefiting from people not questioning it, not trying to, you know, change the status quo or anything like that. And I guess, unfortunately, those are the people who typically have lots of money to put into preventing anything from changing as well.
Thanksgiving is a gigantic industry. That's why I'm so ridiculously surprised that we were able to like fundraise this much. it's a drop in the bucket, but imagine the amount of money that we're fighting against. This is an entire industry that want that is an industry based on murder, you know?
Yeah.
It's it makes my skin crawl. At the same time, I fucking love mashed potatoes and gravy, you know?
Yeah.
And I love vegan mashed potatoes, you know, with almond butter and all that. It's so good. And I'm going to have it. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm not going to celebrate that day. I'm going to have a meal, you know, because I'm celebrating that.
Yeah. And just to kind of circle back to the Sogorayate Land Trust. So why did you choose that organization as the one that you wanted to donate the money towards?
Oh, it's an all-female run organization. It's an all-female run organization that's trying to rematriate the land to the indigenous peoples. And I think that is an amazing thing. I think we need to put women in the forefront of it. There's a nurturing element to wanting compassion. And I believe that a lot of men are jaded in the way they grow up to believe that that compassion is something that's wrong, something that's unnatural. Meanwhile, women have a ridiculous amount of love and compassion. And to know that an organization is completely being run by women for an entire nation of peoples, like, that's amazing to me. And they need all the help we can get. So we're going to give it to them.
Nice. And they are based in California as well?
Yeah, they're based here in the Bay Area, here in Oakland. Ohlone territory is here in the East Bay, what is made up of Berkeley. I mean, it's all this area, but Chechenyo, the language that Almamak is in, was based here in Berkeley and Oakland, where all the chefs are based.
Mm-hmm. And we, right before we started recording, you had mentioned something about the Almamak language. So did you want to tell us quickly about the name change of the zine?
So the first printing, we called it Almamak on Stolen Land. Almamak means let's eat. Then we realized that Almamak, that Chechenyo is a spoken language. So to even be written in English is kind of disrespectful, you know, especially to be written by a person who doesn't know Chechenyo. So we changed it to Give Thanks on Stolen Land. That's what the second printing is. That's what the new PDFs are. It's just another way that we want to recognize our faults, you know, recognize whatever conflicts can come up even while trying to do something good, you know? So, I mean, yeah, we fucked up. It's a spoken language. It shouldn't be written in what we know as, you know, Roman letters. It's, you know.
I mean, what else are we asking people to do if not, you know, like, tackle their dissonance, learn that they did something wrong, and then make a change because of that. Like, I feel like that is the basis of veganism, really.
Yeah. I mean, that's honestly why this was so important to be plant-based. Why I told all the non-vegan chefs, we got Bare Knuckle Pizza. They're not vegan, but they make the best vegan pizza I've ever had in my life. And I will put it up. I will tell every New Yorker who comes here, because they're always like, oh, what's your guys' shitty pizza that you have out here? And I'll be like, go to Bare Knuckle Pizza. That is the only pizza I'm ever going to direct you to. And you will love it, my friend. And yeah, they do. It is delicious. It's amazing. They use Butcher Sun cheese. Butcher Sun is famous for having like this amazing cheese out here. They're located in Berkeley. So Bare Knuckle Pizza uses that cheese. And it's just like, it's just an amazing pizza. But they provided... they provided this shrimp toast recipe, which is crazy to me because it's like this Vietnamese or Asian thing that I never even knew about, that I didn't know people had. But it's like Wonder Bread that's rolled out and then that's rolled super thin and then rolled around shrimp. So there's like this vegan shrimp that they get everywhere. And it's just this crazy weird thing that I'm just like so in love with, you know?
Yeah, I mean, again, as coming from someone who is not great at cooking, at culinary, doesn't have many culinary skills anyways, when I saw that, like, rolling out the Wonder Bread, wrapping it in the shrimp, it was blowing my mind.
it's fun. It's an appetizer that you would never see on a Thanksgiving table, but goddamn, I want to see it on a Thanksgiving table, you know, yeah, with some cranberry ketchup or some shit. You know, it's crazy. It sounds fun. It sounds amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have another recipe in there, something that I'm incredibly proud of. It's by a queer vegan panaderia over here in Oakland that's starting up called Homo La Flor. Mm-hmm. If you're Latin American, you know Selena, you love Selena. She's got a song called Como La Flor. So Homo La Flor is just perfect for nice. This. They included a pre-Columbian, a decolonized concha recipe that we provide in the book in a 5x7 kind of like little postcard. It's amazing. You know, it's beautifully decorated. And I'm so glad that they came on board to do it because it's beautiful.
Yeah, everything in there looks phenomenal. If people want to pick this up, they can go to fuckthanksgiving.bigcartel.com. And again, like I mentioned before, I don't know, because I was going to say you can get the print or the PDF. Are the prints, is the second edition sold out or are you still doing
that? They are sold out. So I only wanted to make 100 copies of each printing because it's kind of hard to do all the printing stuff. It's kind of hard to ship everything out, you know, especially during the time crunch that is Thanksgiving. But at the same time, I wanted these things to be something of value, you know, like the Bay Area chefs that are included in this zine are going to be amazing celebrity chefs one day of Michelin status, every single one of them, honestly. So this is kind of like a very special hold on to it. Next year, maybe there's a volume 2.
Okay.
Maybe it's Los Angeles chefs. Maybe it's New York chefs. I want to see everybody's, you know, version of what Thanksgiving is. That's different everywhere you go. I'm Mexican. That doesn't mean that everybody celebrates the way I do. That's Latin American, you know. I mean, I heard somebody the other day said they were Salvadorian. They had pan de pollo, you know, which is just like this amazing sandwich. And I'm just like, what the hell? Did really you guys have that for Thanksgiving? That's awesome. And that's really what I want people to get out of the zine. When they see it, I want them to know that these recipes are harvest recipes. They're any single one of those recipes, whether you're a vegan or a meat eater or anything, they're amazing. They're delicious. They would complement any dish that you have on your table. Make the persimmon salsa, slather it over your dead bird, whatever the fuck you want. I don't care. Just buy the freaking zine. Pay your damn, you know, pay your damn tax. Mm-hmm. And have fun with it. There are zines here there are recipes here that can make you a freaking millionaire. I include a cheese recipe. I'm like, I hoard my recipes. Yeah, because I think I'm the best of the best. And I'm always like, no, nah, nobody can make it like I can. So blah, blah, blah. I have an almond queso fresco recipe in there. That's just amazing. You know, it's just delicious. It's nice and smooth. It has a little bit of lactic acid if you have it. And that's the best thing about this recipe book. There are options. Like if you don't have lactic acid, I put how much, you know, vinegar you need. If you don't have vinegar, I put how much lime you need. If you don't have lime, go buy a lime.
No, that's awesome. Yeah. I guess, you know, if you wanted a physical copy, you're out of luck, but definitely still go over there, get the PDF.
You want a physical copy, print it out, staple it together.
There you go. And yeah, the money again, going to Sogorayate Land Trust, and you can find them at Sogorayate Land Trust on Instagram or sogorayate-landtrust.org. And of course we'll include all these links and everything else anything else we talked about in the show notes. So if you need the links, go check that out. Raul, is there anything else? Anything else you want to talk about? Anything else you needed to say?
I mean, last couple of things. One thing about the zine, at the end of the zine, there's an activity page for kids. Mm-hmm. Just because I feel like, you know, when you're a kid early on, you're indoctrinated to like think a certain way about Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So that was important for us to have there. Every chef has like their own personal little story, mm-hmm. you know, their own personal why they're making the dish, why their family had the dish in the first place. And I think that is really important. People need to read these and connect with it. Reading them myself, I was like, wow, that's exactly the feeling I get at my Thanksgiving. You know, when I turn on the Food Network and suddenly it's that food, but I look around my table and it's our food. Mm-hmm. And it's more significant of Thanksgiving. And I really want everybody to just take time to read all those parts of all the chefs. It's coming from a beautiful place, and that's the kind of nostalgic culture that we really want to keep, at the same time evolve, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that definitely speaks to what you were saying about like getting the representation at the table. It's not Thanksgiving isn't this homogenous turkey, mashed potatoes, you know, stuffing, and that's it. It's all of these other things. And I agree with you. As I was reading through those little stories, that is the message that I was getting from that.
Yeah, because I mean, I think ultimately people need to realize America is that, you know, it's not just one homogenized thing. There's a lot of differences. There's a lot of variation here in America, and it's beautiful. It's a really nice thing. But aside from that, I just want everybody to know that it's a beautiful holiday. I don't think it isn't. But I think a part of that beauty is knowing the conflict, knowing the bloodshed, and being able to evolve from it. I'm going to give thanks this year, but I know that it's going to be on stolen land.
All right, Chef Raul Medina, thank you so much again for being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
All right, Andy, welcome back to the present. Again, if you want to purchase the PDF of this zine because the physical copies are sold out, you can go to fuckthanksgiving.bigcartel.com, purchase the PDF, and email us the receipt of that so we can double your donation to the Sogorayate Land Trust. Email those receipts to thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. And once again, just to send out all the links, which will also be in our show notes, Sogorayate Land Trust on Instagram, sogorayate-landtrust.org, and The Vegan Taqueria is Raul's personal Instagram.
Yeah, well, I hope everybody enjoyed that conversation and is continuing to think about if and how we should be celebrating during this time and, you know, all about adjusting and moving forward.
So, yeah, once again, Andy, comments, questions, concerns, send those into thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. As always, we would love to hear from you.
Absolutely. And Paul, you know what I love to hear from you? It's the following seven words.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off.